Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm here to address two what we believe to be errors committed by the district court during the summary judgment briefing in this case. The first error that was committed was the determination that the district court made that Mr. Robert Jones was not entitled to FMLA coverage for the entirety of his October 1st, 2009 absence. The second issue I want to address is the subsequent decision that the district court made to ignore the issue of whether C&D Technologies complied with the FMLA and its governing regulations with respect to the certifications that Mr. Jones turned in regarding his October 1st, 2009 absence.
Was there any employer policy regarding the use of FMLA leave time for doctor appointments, limiting the time off to only the hours needed for the appointment?
Nothing in the record to that extent, Your Honor, and although certainly shouldn't be referring to things outside the record, nothing that I'm aware of outside the record either, Your Honor. Specifically, what we have here is a situation where Mr. Jones properly requested an entire day off, an entire day of absence on October 1st, 2009. He submitted two sets of FMLA certification forms provided to him by his employer, neither of which indicated that he would be entitled to anything less than a full day off from work on a day in which he needed to utilize the FMLA.
Well, no, the federal regulations state that activities can be performed with the activities that can be performed without a visit to a health care provider do not constitute covered treatment. You know, why did he have to go to the doctor that morning? Could he have just called the doctor to make sure the paperwork had gone over there for the ultrasound?
He probably could have done that, Your Honor, and if that is all that happened, although I'll address one other issue in a moment, but if that's all that happened, then certainly the district court's determination that what happened that morning did not constitute treatment would be hard for me to argue against. But that is not all that happened, Your Honor.
But is there anything that took place at the doctor's office that could have not been handled as well as a phone call?
Absolutely, Your Honor, and that's what I was about to address. Mr. Jones, while he was there, saw his physician face-to-face, and after that discussion with his physician, the physician made the decision to issue two prescriptions to Mr. Jones, one for Xanax and one for hydrocodone. We're not dealing with, you know, aspirin and some fluids here.
But the doctor, you know, was an open public area. He's not examining him.
And I understand that, Your Honor, but an examination is not required. To the extent that what the statute allows for is either an examination or essentially an observation / evaluation of the condition. And what I would submit to this court is what the doctor did, or at least an inference that can be drawn based on these facts, is that the doctor evaluated Mr. Jones and decided that these prescriptions were warranted, because had Mr. Jones exhibited symptoms of, say he had been profusely sweating or his eyes were bulging or he was shaking and exhibiting symptoms that maybe indicated that he shouldn't be given these drugs, I think it's fair to assume the doctor wouldn't have done that. I think the only way that we get to assume that the doctor did not evaluate him before issuing these drugs is to make an inference against Mr. Jones that the doctor essentially would have given him these drugs regardless of what his appearance was and regardless of his need for them, and I don't think that's an inference that's appropriate on summary judgment, Your Honor.
Now, he could have requested in his FMLA certification a full day of absence from work, couldn't he?
Well, he orally requested a full day of absence, Your Honor.
The night before. Was it the night before? Yes.
It was the day before, yes. He had a discussion with the FMLA coordinator at C&D. His testimony, which was supported by a cell phone record, was also that he called in to his supervisor that evening and left a message requesting a full day. And the certification itself makes no reference to partial days of absence. It indicates that he is will need to miss work for periods, if anything, it references days. It says approximately 2 to 3 days. So there's nothing in the certification itself that would suggest that anything less than a full day is appropriate. And I think what's dangerous about what happened here, what the employer did here, and if this court were to ratify what the district court did here, is that it allows the employers to wield the power in this situation. It allows them to substitute their opinion of how long somebody should need for that of what the employee requested and what the doctor certified, whereas under the FMLA and the governing regulations, that decision is something that should be handled by medical professionals. If C&D had an issue with the length of time that Mr. Jones was taking off, if they did not believe, in which the doctor certified, if they did not believe that that was proper or appropriate, the proper course of action would have been to challenge it pursuant to 305A, 305C or 307A, not to substitute its own judgment in there and make Mr. Jones sue them if they, and prove, carry the burden of proof in a court that they got it wrong.
But his doctor, here's what his doctor certified. His doctor certified that he needed time off for the test or examinations. But there was neither a test nor an examination the morning of October 1st, was there?
There was certainly not a test on the morning.
Well, are you arguing that there was an examination, that was an examination?
Not an examination as much as an evaluation, Your Honor, which is also allowed for under the statute.
But he didn't certify evaluation. He certified examination.
Well, if
I'll tell you, if my doctor was examining me out in a public area, I'd be pretty upset.
No, and that's certainly not what happened, Your Honor. If you look at the September 25th certification, which was the initial certification Mr. Jones provided, what the doctor certified him to be absent for were occasional tests slash office visits. This was an office visit. There's no other way to describe this other than a visit that Mr. Jones made to the office. And then further down on that form, and it's page 92 in the appendix, the doctor writes, yes, for office visits and occasional tests, when describing what reasons that the employee would need to be off of work for. So again, the doctor is specifically referencing office visits in the September 25th certification, and to the extent that the employer was confused about that or wasn't sure what that meant or was unclear as to whether the October 1st visit fell within this, that's what the regulations are for. It's not for allowing the employer the discretion to terminate the employee and say, you know what, if we got it wrong, go hire a lawyer, sue us, and good luck, it's your burden of proof in court. That's not the way this law is supposed to work, Your Honor. The second point I wanted to make real briefly is there's heavy reliance both by C&D and by the district court on the Darst case. And what I would suggest to Your Honors is that this is a much different case than Darst. I think it's a lot more similar to Kaufman versus FedEx, which actually Judge Williams was on the panel for. In Darst, what happened there was the court made a determination that there was no treatment at all that occurred on the days for which the employee was terminated. And in this case, it cannot be disputed that Mr. Jones received some form of treatment on the day in question. The only issue is the morning, and again, I question whether or not the employer has the right to go back and override the employee's request, which is backed up by an employer certification, because it has a subjective belief that maybe the employee is using too much time. And I see I'm into my rebuttal time, so I'll yield for now.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Brazier.
May it please the court, my name is Anthony Prather, and I represent C&D Technologies. The court is focused in on what I consider to be the critical issue here, and that is whether or not Mr. Jones was entitled to FMLA and treatment for his absence on the morning of October 1st of 2009. And the law is very clear that that is Mr. Jones's burden, in fact, to prove. However, there are a number of undisputed facts that clearly document that Mr. Jones did not receive treatment as treatment is defined by the FMLA on the morning of October 1st, 2009. Specifically, you can look at Dr. Lubeck's notes with respect to that particular unscheduled visit. And the first thing she notes is that it was a walk-in appointment. The next thing that she does not note, she does not identify any symptoms associated with any medical condition of Mr. Jones. There's also no pain rating noted. And in the section titled Chief Complaint or Need, the doctor wrote, quote, due on Sunday, refill of hydrocodone, refill of Xanax, and pain management 11-9. So that's all that was in the doctor's notes with respect to this unscheduled visit. But that's not the only evidence of relevance. In fact, if you look at Mr. Jones's deposition testimony, he testified to the following with respect to this very unscheduled appointment. First off, that he did not have an appointment scheduled with her. Second, that he was not examined or treated by her during this particular appointment. Third, that he visited her office only to confirm paperwork and to fill prescriptions. And then fourth, that he only saw Dr. Lubeck when she came out to the front office area and confirmed that he didn't need any paperwork for the ultrasound examination that afternoon. The court is correct in identifying there was no examination. He did not go back into an examination room. She simply walked out to the front area and said to him, you've got all the paperwork you need. Consistent with the testimony that Mr. Jones was neither treated or examined that morning by Dr. Lubeck, he didn't identify her in his initial disclosures, he didn't identify her on his preliminary or final witness list, and he didn't identify her as an expert to testify in his case.
Let me just ask you, going back to the employer's discretion to determine how many hours an employee needs for an FMLA-covered medical appointment, is there any limit?
Absolutely. The limitation is based upon the information provided by the doctor. And I'll go to that here because when you look at the information provided by the doctor, the information was complete. The information, there was no additional information needed by C&D. There was nothing to interpret. Both the September 25th FMLA certification and the October 2nd FMLA certification referred to doctor's visits, i.e. treatment. So there was nothing else that my client needed to do with respect to those certifications other than look at the certifications, go back and look at the information provided by Mr. Jones and determine that the absence on the morning of October the 1st, 2009 was not covered by either of those certifications.
You know, given that he called and asked whether he could pick up his check that morning and, in fact, came and did so, isn't it... wouldn't you think that he believed he had the employer's position to be away for the day? In other words, who's going to show up and ask to pick up a check during hours that he thinks he's supposed to be working?
I can't answer to Mr. Jones's motivation. I will tell you, in the conversations that he had the day before, and we've addressed this in our brief, there was no discussion by Mr. Jones as it related to an appointment on the morning of October 1st, 2009. The only conversations that he had with Ms. Morgan related to the ultrasound at 1 p.m. that afternoon in Crawfordsville, Indiana.
Well, if we're assuming that he called his employer on September 30 indicating he would be gone for the ultrasound appointment, wouldn't perhaps the lack of a return call limiting his leave to half a day indicate he had, to him, indicate he probably had permission to take a whole day?
I can't, again, speak to his motivation. I will tell you that my client disputed the existence of him leaving a voicemail message after hours, but simply giving him the benefit of the doubt, decided that it would not punish him in accordance with the attendance policy associated with an alleged failure to call him before the start of the shift. Can I answer that question?
So when you
look not only at the doctor's notes, but you look at his deposition admissions with respect to the fact that he wasn't examined or treated, there's another, I think, a critical point here. And that is, and I think, Your Honor, you raised it earlier, there was nothing that took place that morning that couldn't have taken place by a telephone call. He did two things. He got an existing prescription refilled. And if you look at the doctor's notes, it clearly states that it's a refill of existing positions. There was no examination and determination that he needed new prescriptions. These were simply refilling existing prescriptions. And the other thing, confirming that all of the paperwork had been forwarded to the ultrasound, both of those things could have been accomplished by a telephone call. I clearly have gotten prescriptions refilled without having to go in and see my doctor. Now, Mr. Jones's representations in his brief that he was, quote, examined on the morning of October 1st, 2009, is simply a misrepresentation of the record. He's clearly testified that he was not physically seen, treated, or examined by Dr. Lubeck that morning. That's clear from his deposition testimony. In addition to the fact that he didn't receive any treatment, there's not a shred of evidence in the record that Mr. Jones was unable to do the duties of his job on the morning of October 1st, 2009. In fact, the only information that is even closely relevant with respect to whether or not he could or could not do his job is the October 2 FMLA certification that noted that Mr. Jones was not presently incapacitated. Now, in both his reply brief and his original reply brief, Mr. Jones wants to tie together everything that he did on October the 1st and suggests that they are all connected. And he suggests in his brief that he was examined and evaluated by Dr. Lubeck that morning and that he was examined that afternoon, or I should say treated that afternoon in the ultrasound. Despite his arguments otherwise in the brief, the deposition testimony simply does not support that claim. Additionally, there's absolutely no basis to lump together an unscheduled drop by in a doctor's office in Vetersburg, Indiana, on the morning of October 1st, 2009, with an ultrasound scheduled for 1 p.m. in Crawfordsville, Indiana. You're talking about two different healthcare providers in two different cities in the state of Indiana. If it's okay with the court doesn't have any further questions on the question of treatment, I will very quickly address the FMLA certification issue. Thank you. Counsel suggests that my client had a responsibility or an obligation to in fact, allow Mr. Jones to cure the FMLA certifications to the extent that my client felt that they were either improper or that they were incorrect, or that there was some need for clarification. And the reality of the situation is there was no need for either. When you look, in fact, at both the September 25th certification and you also look at the October 2nd certification, they were complete. They dealt with clearly, in his case, a chronic condition, and each of those certifications identified first that the condition required periodic visits, second, that the chronic condition had continued over a period of time, and then last, both certifications identified the probable duration of potential incapacity. So there was nothing that my client needed. There was nothing further that would have been required as it related to a chronic condition. So my client was fully within its rights to make a disciplinary decision when Mr. Jones did not appear for work on the morning of October 1st, 2009, and had no obligation under the statute or the regulations to allow him to cure FMLA certifications that did not need to be cured. There's no further questions from the court. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Fraser. You have 1 minute, Mr. Prather.
All right, then I'll be brief. with respect to Mr. Prather's statements regarding whether or not Mr. Jones was treated on the day in question, the reason why we represented that in our brief is very simple. There's a line of cases, including the Stevenson case from this court, going through a number of district court cases that were laid out in the briefs, that talk about what the standard is for treatment, because it wasn't clearly defined by Congress when they enacted the FMLA. And what those cases demonstrate is that the types of things that Mr. Jones did on October 1st, 2009 constitute treatment under the FMLA. Going to a doctor, having a discussion with a doctor, obtaining a prescription from a doctor, those are treatment under the FMLA. And therefore, what Mr. Jones did that day, let alone the ultrasound in the afternoon, is clearly covered by the Family Medical Leave Act. And in closing, I just want to say, this case is really just a very curious case in that Mr. Jones was fired for exactly what he was certified to take leave for, which was to go see his doctor for his serious health condition. That's exactly what he did on the first, And that's exactly what was certified, exactly what he was approved to take time off for, and it still got him fired. And that's not what the Family Medical Leave Act was enacted for. That's not what it should stand for. And this decision needs to be reversed. I thank all three of your honors for your time this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Thank you, Mr. Prather. Case will be taken under advisement.